right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
And welcome to Alouette's Flight Deck. This is a podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with Cliffy D. How are you, buddy?
Oh, man. You know, I had this crazy nightmare on the weekend. I dreamt that the Alouettes played a game against the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and they just got completely spanked, 31-7. I woke up in a cold sweat, and I'm like, oh, God, I really hope that didn't happen. That just doesn't seem possible, does it? But then I went on Twitter, I went on Facebook, I went on all the internets, and my nightmare came true.
Yeah, it was bad. And you know it's bad when a lot of our Twitter followers gave some great comments. You know it's bad when the best thing that people remember about the game this past week was the $2 hot dogs and the free ice cream at the end of the game.
How about that, eh? Free ice cream after the game. Yeah. And I couldn't help but make the joke that, well, of course it's vanilla, like the offense was.
Ah, nice. My thought is this. You know an Alouettes game is bad, or when the Alouettes offense is bad, when you buy four $2 hot dogs and you spend more than the Alouettes can score.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was not good. No. Not good at all.
This is the worst showing for the Alouettes at home since the it's very recent, actually. It was the debacle that where the Alouettes scored back to back games of 5 points back in 2014. It was the worst loss at home to the Hamilton Tiger Cats since 1985.
I was just a youngin' back then.
Just a youngin'. The game was bad. And obviously, as an Owls podcast, we're trying to be able to, to be as positive as... I'm sorry. Well, I can't say it without laughing my ass off.
Oh, there's no putting lipstick on this pig. They played terrible. Yes. There was no sense of cohesion whatsoever. They couldn't put together anything. They didn't even sniff the red zone, for crying out loud. The best they could do was get close to Hamilton's 35 and then nothing. And then we just line everything up and hope to pray that Boris Beattie doesn't brick another bloody field goal attempt. Oh, no. I'm sorry. That was just unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. I want everybody on that team, with the exception of a few folks that I named in the alternative, hang your heads in shame. I do want a refund. I think the team truly needs to stand up and say, you know what? That's on us. That was absolutely unacceptable by Montreal Alouette standards. Fans, we are extremely sorry. We will make this right. That's what I want to hear right now from this team. I don't care if we start at the top all the way down to the friggin' water boy. I want an apology for that absolute abomination that we saw last Friday.
Yeah. It was just absolutely wrong. And I know you mentioned it in the alternative, and anybody who didn't happen to hear it, I'm going to try to find it. And I think Nick Lewis put it the best. Did he ever, right? I tell you.
I said I try very hard not to swear on social media or anything, because it doesn't add anything. But he put it very succinctly. He said, "We effing suck," and it's very hard to argue with Nick at that point. Nick knows what he's talking about when he says these MFers need to look in the mirror and say, we got to do better. Mm-hmm. And he's absolutely right. Nick nailed it. And Nick played a really great game. And even he had said, I've got to be better as a player too. This whole team as a whole needs to be better. And he's absolutely right. I mean, even trying to think of highlights or bright spots for this game, and they are so few and far between. Like, there's just nothing. Again, the defense played well for the most part, but I mean, by the end of the third quarter, once again, they're gassed. So, of course, it's so easy to hang 31 right. points on a defense that's just gasping for air at this point, because they're constantly on the field and the offense does nothing. Special teams just poops the bed.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to clean that up too. I mean, there's just trying to find positives in this is next to impossible.
I know. And you know what? We can get all the expletives we want out. And, you know, you and I could do this and it wouldn't make any point. But I found the clip. This is what Nick Lewis had to say.
But you didn't have your starting quarterback.
Yeah. Why am I here? Why do we show up? If that's going to be the excuse, then why are we showing up? There's no excuses. We all professionals. They put you in the game, win the game. That's it. That's the bottom line. If you can't do it, then you shouldn't be here. We're here to win football. We don't get paid to play football. We get paid to win games. Bottom line. Man, like I said, it's about looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, I'm not good enough. If you can admit to yourself that you're not good enough, then that's where you start. And we're not good enough. We're not good enough individually. We're not good enough as a team. We're just not good enough. And until everybody in this locker room can look at themselves and look and see where they can get better, me included, I'm not pointing a finger at nobody. I'm just saying we have to get better. We, and I'm included, I have to get better. You know, I've asked to do more and things like that because I want to be better. No, I mean, I don't think it's about character. If it was character, then that's a whole different problem. We didn't play very well. I've never played this bad coming off a bye week. Like, we should have been very well prepared. We should have went out and executed a lot better, and we didn't.
What was the main issue tonight on offense?
I don't know. You watched the game. You tell me what the main issue was. I watched most of it, but... But, I mean, there's a lot of issues. There's a lot of issues. But we got 15 weeks to correct it. Or actually, we got a week to correct it. We got 3 games in 11 days after this. So, I mean, we got to get it together or we're about to lose a lot of games. And I hope everybody takes it seriously. I hope this affects everybody in this locker room and we come out and be better next week.
I think one of the, you know, it's telling. It's actually, if nobody had been there to catch what he said, nobody would have known and it wouldn't have made anything. But one of the huge things that he actually said was, we're not here to play football. We're here to win games. And the problem is with the current version of the Alouettes is they are not going to win any. Now, I understand that we did not have a quarterback this week because of the inflammation due to Kevin Glenn's eye. I get that. Okay, we're lucky enough to be able to still have, and that's another thing we have to talk about, by the way. Another we're lucky enough to have Daron Carter up to right before the Ottawa game on August 19th. I'm like, what pro league? I say we'll talk about this more, but what pro league actually waits more than a month to have a hearing? I don't get that. We'll talk more. But there are so many things wrong with the game that happened. I mean, it's the Owls. Come on, to be fair, and I think you'll agree with me on this one, the Alouettes were playing absolutely amazing. It was almost 2-1 in yards because, you know, the Tiger Cats were playing just as well offensively than the Alouettes were. But it's, you know, Mazzoli was garbage. But unfortunately for the Owls, it was the exact same thing. You know, this was Rakeem Cato's third game versus the Hamilton Tiger Cats in his career. You know, this is obviously the worst game versus the Hamilton Tiger Cats in his career. And in my opinion, I don't think it should have been Rakeem Cato's third start versus Hamilton in his career. I really don't. Now, we'll talk about it a little bit more too, but just the ineptitude, everything. You know, defense was phenomenal. But as you mentioned before the Nick Lewis comment, they were, you know, they were playing amazing. And as you said, they're gassed. What do you expect when you can't do this? Them, BJ Cunningham, absolutely amazing. And it's a Javon Johnson, right?
Oh, Javon was on another level. Like, he was playing with purpose. He was there to win a football game. And I just wish we could have cloned and had, like, you know, 46 Javon Johnson's playing this past Friday because he did great.
What about the ratio?
True. Well, what if we did the experiments in Canada and had, like, cloned half of them in Canada? Does that count? Like, I mean, they'd technically be born in Canada, so maybe that would kind of work out.
Yeah.
We'd have to get into the legalities of this, but yeah. But again, like, this is a guy who played with CBA. This is a guy that played with fire. This is a guy that came to play. I mean, he had an interception, quarterback sack along with Bowman. He came to play. And unfortunately, like I said, the defensive line, they played outstanding. They did really well until, like I said, towards the end when they were just on the field way too much. So, of course, you know, these guys are human. Like, they're 300 pounds each. And, you know, you're going to get winded eventually. No matter, I don't care how good of a shape you're in. You know, 300 pounds is a lot to carry, even if you're in tip-top shape. And by the end of a couple of hours of just trotting back onto the field over and over again, yeah, it's going to catch up to you. So I understand these guys were spent, essentially, by the time the third quarter came to a close. So I don't blame them whatsoever. Johnson, like I said, can't do it all by himself. So where was the rest of the defense? Where was the rest of the secondary? I mean, they were chasing their tails for the better part of the evening.
Yeah.
And it's just frustrating. Like, the big thing, and this is what really kills me, and I even mentioned this too in the alternative, is if you're a CFL offensive coordinator and you're about to play the Alouettes, I said, best way to get yards on the ground, throw it in the flats, because there's tons of real estate right there, and no Alouettes are going to be anywhere even close to it. They won't even be within striking distance of the flats. Just put your check down receiver, tell your check down receiver to make your way to the flats, guaranteed 8 yards every single time. Mm-hmm. You'd see, I saw it as early as the game against Winnipeg in week one. You saw that. Game against Ottawa became even more prevalent. And this past Friday, it was clear as day that this is a great strategy. I mean, if the Alouettes are trying to find a way to, I don't know, pad their stats for yards allowed, well, that's a great way to do it, because there is no coverage whatsoever. Guys like Masoli and Trevor Harris, they look like geniuses, mm-hmm. just being able to move the chains over and over and over again on this Alouettes team. And it's frustrating. You're sitting in the stands and you're just in knots over it, because how, like, I don't know diddly squat about coaching football, but if I can see it, how in God's name can any of the defensive coaches not see that as well and just make those adjustments, just those little things? Like, hey, FYI, buddy's open over there. Maybe get a man on him.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, we can all be Monday morning quarterbacks. We can do it. And we're fans. We pay to go see the game. We're there. We are there like any press. We're there. We can contribute. We can bitch. We can whatever about the game. But, you know, when your offense doesn't show up as much as it didn't on the new post CFL boxes. You like that one, eh?
Oh yeah.
Worked that one in well. Our defense shows up more on those post boxes than our offense does. What do you expect? I mean, it's, you know, sure, the Alouettes lead the league as of week four in time of possession. But if you can't score, what is the point?
Exactly. What is the point? I mean, yeah, the offense is on the field, and like I said, the key is keep as much as your offense on the field as much as possible. But if you're not doing anything, and this is the thing that drove me crazy with Rakeem Cato, I've been touting him. I mean, he looks so poised and so good in training camp. Even the little bits of action that he got in relief of Kevin Glenn, you just had that sense like, okay, we're going to be okay. This is fine. No need to worry. I think Cato's got it now. Like before, last year was a blip on the radar as far as I was concerned. I mean, he was thrown into a terrible situation, and call me naive, call me what you will, but I really truly thought that, okay, now that he's got an actual, honest to goodness offensive coordinator, sort of showing him the ropes and developing a playbook that can sort of play to his strengths a little bit, maybe this is just what Cato needed to really stand out, and I think he's got it now. But once the bright lights came on, my goodness, he just sort of, he folded.
To me, it's once the second half came about, but I really think that there was more to it. There was something that I think really set the team off. It was before the Brandon Banks return, which was spectacular, by the way. Spectacular. He did what he had to do, and yeah. Is that the fourth or fifth time that he's done that versus the Owls in the past?
Oh, I've lost count. I know last year.
Did in the playoffs against us twice in Hamilton.
Technically three times, but one was called back because of the penalty, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
He just loves to torch the Alouettes with those returns. And then you got the defenders just sort of flopping around like dead fish practically.
Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, the Alouettes have had problems in the past when it comes to their special teams, but it has been drastically better. It has in the past couple seasons. It's been a hell of a lot better than what it was.
worlds better. I mean, Kavis Reed definitely deserves a ton of credit for turning this team around by and large when it comes to special teams.
Right.
But
yes.
And I guess you're allowed, I guess after doing so well, you're allowed one bad game. And I guess this past Friday just happened to be Kavis's one bad game. And this is an opponent that he just dreaded planning for. I've heard him on numerous occasions talk about practically losing sleep because of Brandon Banks and the Tiger Cats. But right. Last year did a great job of corralling them. But this year,
Banks, you know, Banks' 86-yard touchdown went ahead and put the Tiger Cats up by 8 at that point in the third quarter, and it was it. It was over. It was already over. But I think the one thing that really sealed or really started the meltdown for the Owls was the one play where Coach Pop challenged. It was supposed to. He was trying to get a challenge. I think it was either on a trip or on a roughing the passer call late in the second quarter. Mm-hmm. And it was a play that could not be challenged, if I'm not mistaken. And thus, hey, wait a minute, a delay a game penalty. I mean, I think, isn't that the third or fourth time already this season that has occurred?
Third.
Coach Pop, you're a GM. You should know these new rules. And yes, that is a sentence with a period after every single word that I just said.
Yes. Yes. And this is it. There's an old saying, ignorance is no excuse. Don't tell me, well, I didn't know the rules, or that's not going to fly. That's why you have a coach then. Then if that's the case, being a head coach and general manager is great. Mm-hmm. If you can pull it off. Chris Jones, by and large, can do it. John Huffnagel with Calgary before this season did a great job of doing it. Jim Barker, before hiring Scott Milanovic, was doing it as well. But there comes a point in time, and of course, Wally Boito, I'd be remiss to forget him. Mm-hmm. But there comes a point in time where you just have to be able to delegate, and you just have to decide what's more important, being the head coach or being the general manager, because maybe doing both might just be putting a little too much on your plate at this moment. And it's frustrating because you look like an idiot. And I hate to say that because I really, really like Jim Pop. I do. I've got a great relationship with him and I'll never speak ill of him. But at the same time, when you got fans that are just chirping because of these moves, because of these challenges that can't be challenged. I mean, it just, how do you defend that? How do you say, well, you got nothing, absolutely nothing. What do you say at that point to justify it? There's another thing too. Once is a mistake, twice is a choice. And we're at three now, three and counting. So I don't know. I mean, at this point, can we find some sort of way to deter our coaches from making these challenges? Like, I understand you want to get the rules right. I understand too, the refereeing has been atrocious by and large, and it's not sour grapes here. I mean, you've seen it in other games as well. They were just, they're flag happy. They clearly want to be the stars of the show for whatever reason. And it's just maddening. Like, there's got to be some sort of happy balance between the two where the coaches can get a legitimate challenge going and the referees don't end up looking, you know, making everybody else look foolish as a result. There surely has to be a way to make this work. There has to be some sort of happy medium as far as that goes.
I don't know. I really think that I wish he would concentrate on being the general manager. The general manager that the Alouettes fans have come to love and have come to respect. And CFL fans, too, have come to respect. But look at your record as a standalone head coach when you come into a season. You know, he took over for Higgins last year when the team was 3-5. He went 3-7 the rest of the season. He's gone 1-2 so far. Not necessarily at a point to get fired, but the only person who's going to be able to fire him or relieve him of his duties would be the ownership.
And I've actually had a few people ask me, is it time for Jim Pop to leave? I want to say no. I really do. I want to say that as general manager, his ability to find talent is second to none still. I mean, he's still finding honest-to-goodness talent for this team. But when it comes to the head coaching part, I've heard a few more people say, the general manager of the Alouettes has to fire the head coach of the Alouettes. Mm-hmm. And it's, like I said, very hard to make an argument against that.
His season that he came in, his first season as a standalone head coach was 2007. He went 8-10. 8-10. So far, I understand we're only 4 weeks in, but we're still 1-2. You know, his as a head coach, his record is not that good as a head coach. You know, he's this isn't up to date. He's 21 and 30. I'm not adding this up properly. But either way, the regular season he's 20-20. He is 22-29 as a head coach in the regular season. Hmm. What? I'm sorry. I love Jim Pop, but again, next year, unfortunately, I think it's all we can talk about. At least Wally Buono knew when to step down, and it's not like he was the head coach for the longest time in BC. He took himself out of the picture, but he brought himself back in because he felt that he had to. This is a situation, in my opinion, where Jim Pop did not have to be the head coach.
Agreed. And again, you've got a very good...
It should be AC? Oh. No. I love AC as much as everybody else does. But he needs to learn. He needs to learn first.
I don't get that sentiment, Tim. I don't get the sentiment of, well, put AC in charge. In charge, the guy is still learning how to be a coach. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I think you said it the best. I think it was on Twitter where you said, what did you say? It was about AC specifically. You were talking about the coaches in particular, and you said that none of the coaches deserve to be there. I think I'm paraphrasing.
No, at that point, yeah. And
I think that's
that may have been out of frustration, but I looked at the effort that was being delivered on all ends, and I looked at the very tenable situation that this team is now in when it comes to its coaches, and do any of them really truly deserve to be a head coach? I'm hard pressed to say yes. I mean, especially too, like, I was all in on Noel Thorpe as head coach, and by and large I still would be, but it's clear as day that the only way he's going to ever be considered as head coach is still keeping the seat warm for AC, which seems to be the ultimate plan, which again, how long of a plan do you want to make this? 2 years? 5 years? 20 years? Like, what's 2 months even? Like, what's the game plan, so to speak, for Anthony Calvillo as head coach of the Montreal Alouettes? And is that even the plan to do? I mean, if he's having this much trouble with the offense, and I understand, like, he doesn't have all the pieces in place, I understand he's got some injuries now to deal with, but there's no excuse. At the end of the day, players play, coaches coach, and you find a way to make it happen.
Right.
And I would say, like, if they had turned this team over to Noel Thorpe last year when Tom Higgins was let go, or even at the end of the season, like, let Pop finish out the year, fine, whatever. It is what it is. But if they said, okay, you know what? Noel Thorpe's our guy. We're going to make him our guy, and we're going to build everything around him. And I have to believe at that time, if they did that back in November, made Thorpe the head coach, but say, okay, you got to keep AC on, even if it's just as quarterback's coach or something, anything, until we get him up to speed, sort of thing. I want to believe in my heart of hearts that Thorpe would have been on board with that. If you asked him that today, now he'd be like, hard no.
Well,
I want to be the boss.
Yeah, after the offseason, though, that he went through, do you blame him?
Really, I don't. I mean, like, I'd be wanting to get out of Dodge too. I mean, if I'm just a lame duck at this point, and I'm pretty sure that's how Thorpe is feeling right now. Like, we know what kind of coach he is. His defensive prowess stands up head and shoulders above anyone else in this league. He can go toe-to-toe with just about anyone. Can he be a head coach? I don't see why he can't. It's just really unfortunate that, in all likelihood, if he's going to be a head coach anywhere in football, it sure as hell is not going to be with the Montreal Alouettes. And quite frankly, we're doing this, that's at the expense of making sure that Anthony Calvillo becomes our head coach, because we have to honor him because he's a legend.
He is a legend. Listen, but he has to earn it. I love AC, but any coach has to earn that head coaching title.
Absolutely. You know? It's not just handed to you. And I don't care if Sam Etcheverry was a great quarterback who became a great head coach for the Alouettes. I don't care. Name any of these other star athletes that somehow managed to make the transition into being a terrific coach. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying it shouldn't just happen just for the sake of preserving someone's legacy.
I can give a good example too, and I usually do this on the other podcast that I do, and I'm going to give a good example. I usually don't bring in other leagues. You're talking just like that. In the Arena League, you were talking about players becoming coaches. just seems that for the Tampa Bay Storm, Lawrence Samuels is one of the best known players in league history, as you know, for offense. And this year, you know, he was brought in by the home team Tampa Bay Storm, played very well, and put in his head coach, and he has done absolutely horrible as a head coach, especially this year. Now, this is a 1-13 Tampa Bay Storm team, which you'd never expect from such a storied franchise. I don't want the Alouettes to become just that, a storied franchise with a former player being utterly garbage on the field. I mean, I don't know what else to say. You know, there are many reasons why that this team is in its current situation. It's just not the salary cap this year. This has been growing for years. You don't get and tune a quarterback, a new quarterback, to come in. It's going to bite you in the ass, and that's exactly what's happened.
You reap what you sow. Like you said, it started with the quarterback. It started when, after the Grey Cup wins, you've got a tremendous coaching staff in place, and you had to know that this wasn't going to last forever. You knew Mark Trestman was eventually going to make his way back to the NFL. You had Scott Milanovic sitting right there to be the head coach. That should have been the easiest transition to make since Tracy Hamm passed the reins on over to Anthony Calvillo, who passed the reins on to who? Yeah, exactly. So that's just one of many examples of not being able to let go. And look what it's gotten you. Like you said, this is now the situation we're in. We're now with a three-headed monster as far as the coaching ranks go. We don't know who the hell the next quarterback is going to be after Kevin Glenn. And even then, Kevin Glenn, like I said, is not a long-term solution.
No.
So at what point you've got all these rookie quarterbacks and they're dying to get a chance. They're dying to get their reps in. And they're going to have games like what Rakeem Cato did. And I think if you had told fans in advance, hey, listen, we've got a great quarterback here. We want to get the young guy some reps. He's going to muff a few plays here and there. Just please be patient, because this is an evolution. This is part of the growing process. Just like when Tracy Hamm, you know, slowly eased Calvillo in and let him take over.
Right.
I mean, I know we're not comparing, you know, we're not exactly comparing apples to apples here.
No. But I think, you know, this thing's gone. This is past the 1 year, 2 year, 3. That, you know, I understand, as you said, it's a long-term thing. Look what year we're in since AC left. We still haven't figured it out. And I feel that sometimes with some of these quarterbacks, it's done not done properly. You know, my thought is, again, Rakeem Cato, we'll talk about this now. Rakeem Cato should not have started that game. Should have Vernon Adams? No. I honestly think, and I think the way that it's going, I really think that they should have gone with Brandon Bridge. And the way that, if you look at the way that happened this week, fourth quarter, okay? Yes, I understand we're in garbage time, right? Mm-hmm. Fourth quarter, we're down. Vernon Adams is brought in. I understand that he was put as a second string, but Brandon Bridge did not get on the field at all, not even on third downs. And usually on your short third downs, you have the third stringer come in. But on a fourth down late in the game where we could have had another three plays where the quarterback could try something, on a third and one, they go for a pass instead of just going forward a yard. I just don't get it. I honestly think that this team, the Owls, as much as I love the Owls, the quarterback situation is going to continue to bite them in the ass.
Yeah,
they're going to possibly lose, you know, a Brandon Bridge or Rakeem Cato, whatever it's going to be. But is it the right quarterback? You have too many quarterbacks on the roster.
Yeah, and again, like you said, if we lose one of these guys, whether it is a Rakeem Cato or Brandon Bridge, what if another team picks one of these guys up and turns them into the superstar that we know they could be if properly nurtured in their system? So it's frustrating. As an LOS fan as well, it is frustrating, because it's not like you couldn't see this coming. Like I said, we saw the writing on the wall several years ago just after the Grey Cup wins. And ever since then, it's just sort of, it's been a merry-go-round, really. And at what point do we have to stop the ride and get everybody sorted out, good, bad, or other? I mean, this is the hard part, really, because I understand you want to put your best foot forward, and you've got the talent there. I mean, Brandon Bridge could be the next great Canadian superstar, or hell, just the next great superstar. There are a lot of people that think that he could go to the NFL with the proper training and light up the league. Rakeem Cato, Vernon Adams, they could be true superstars if they've got an offense that's tailored for them, one that's built to their specifications, and if they're given the chance to really truly play. But also, too, they've got to be nurtured. They can't just be thrown in the fire and like, well, I hope you don't suck this time around. And again, that's why you have a Kevin Glenn there to sort of lend a helping hand. But at the same time, like, if there's no faith in any of these youngsters, and you can tell, too, like, there's a lot of times where I just felt like Cato was just being hung out to dry this past Friday. So, I mean, that's why he's got to shoulder a lot of this blame. And to his credit, he actually has he's actually owning up to a lot of the debacle this past Friday.
Right.
He's definitely taken his fair share of blame.
Which shows his maturity.
Absolutely. I mean, again, he's a gamer. He knows he can be better. And you get the sense that, okay, he's owned it. He'll get better for it. He'll be richer for the experience. That's great. In the meantime, though, should he have really been put in that place? Absolutely not. It's a disservice to him and to the team in general. And that's got to fall on the coaches, every single one of them.
Now, what else do you think is going on? I mean, it's, you know, we're down, you know, we got Rutley as our running back, and he's shown he's a very capable running back, but just shows that they're not using him as much as they should, which always seems to be the case when I find with the Alouettes. I understand, you know, CFL is a passing game. I get that. But there have been, I mean, look at John Cornish. I mean, there's a great example of a guy who is a double threat. I mean, we've had many a double threat that you and I could name off the top of our heads easily that are not with the Alouettes anymore, that were just discarded.
Oh, yeah.
But what is happening? I mean, is it that? I mean, what was up with the O-line this week? I mean, we gave up 8 sacks. I think it was coming into the game, I think we had given up only 1 sack in 2 games, and we give up 8?
8 quarterback sacks.
8.
5 of them to Cato.
Yes.
I mean, and this is not a muscular guy. Like, this guy is a buck 75 soaking wet. I imagine he must have spent better part of Saturday in the cold tub. I mean, he must have been hurting like crazy, just being ragdolled. That's really what it was. He was just.
I mean, Mazzoli was too. To be fair, I say we're going with that. But if this is more or less the Owls' O line, if you can't get anything, if you don't have your protection, and your quarterback keeps going down, it just something seemed to be off completely.
Yeah, and you can only play the rookie card so many times. Yes, we've got youngsters.
No, he's not a rookie anymore. Look how many games he started last year. He's not a rookie. He's not.
No.
You want a pure rookie? It would be Brandon Bridge and it would be Vernon Adams.
Yep.
They're pure rookies.
No, Cato's put his time in. He knows exactly what it takes to win. I mean, like I said, you'd think having gone through the experience of what he did in training camp of, okay, I'm not the man anymore. Maybe I never really was the man to start with, but now I have a chance to learn. I have a chance to be.
Training camp was weird in itself.
By and large, but at least at training camp, you knew that Kevin Glenn was the starter and the backup position was wide open. Cato stepped up to the plate, and that's really where that faith came in that, okay, if Kevin Glenn goes down, Cato should be able to step in and things will be okay. And that's why I didn't even panic when this talk of Kevin Glenn with an eye infection came about. Like, okay, well, we got Cato. We'll be fine. He did okay. And then he didn't. And you just wonder where the disconnect was. What exactly happened? And like I said, there's plenty of blame to go around. And we've certainly thrown our fair share of it. Pretty much, I'd say we've just about hit everybody when it comes to blame, have we not?
Pretty much so. I mean, you know, the guys are going to get their targets and get their receptions. You know, you can't really fault that. I mean, if the defense was playing piss poor, which they are not, you know, if you're gassed, you're gassed. I'm looking at Cato here, by the way. Okay. He's had 11 starts in his career. He's lost 6 of his last 8, including 3 in a row. Maybe it's not sure Brandon Bridge got a loss in a meaningless game versus Saskatchewan, the last game of the year, last game of the season last year.
A meaningless overtime loss.
I understand, and both you and I both know, they put a lot of money and a number one draft pick into Vernon Adams Jr. But when he came in, you know, they didn't, again, I'm going back to something I've said already this year, is that the training camp, you do not play your number one for a quarter and a half for each of the games. They're meaningless games. Play who you need to play. Sure, fans hate to go to a game and have that loss on their record that they attend. I mean, it's maybe Cato just needs to, the experiment needs to stop. I mean, maybe they have figured him out. Maybe we need a taller guy behind center. You know, teams are gonna, you know, if not, you're gonna lose a Brandon Bridge. Something needs to be done.
Yeah, you're stepping over dollars to pick up pennies. Doesn't make sense. No pun intended.
I mean, we could talk about stats all we want, but let's try to talk something that's a little bit something I mentioned before, and I don't remember if there's anything you wanted to bring up either. What is with this thing with the CFL and their appeal process? You know, usually like it's like the NHL, they'll come down with something almost immediately, if not the next day, because they have a look at every angle. I understand they brought it down the decision for Jerron Carter within 4 days, which was pretty damn decent. But you know, besides the Deflategate thing, which took forever up until recently, a month, and it's 2 days prior to the Owls playing at Ottawa. Because it seemed to me that this is being easily about to be set up to be where the Owls are not going to have him to play versus Ottawa.
Yeah, isn't that a funny coincidence? Right. You couldn't help but notice that. Yeah, this decision, whichever way it goes, it's kind of funny that it's just against Ottawa. And Deron, and again, I'm a huge fan of Deron, and I kind of get he seems to be playing up his character, if you will. Like, he's got this sort of, you know, heel persona, if you will, that, you know, he's just, you know, let the haters hate, and I'm just going to feed into it, which I can't say 100% that I endorse, but at the same time, don't necessarily not endorse either. Like, I figure you may as well embrace it at this point. I think that's what he's done. And the fact that he's very much looking forward to the next time that Ottawa plays, like, he's sort of been hinting at it a little bit as far as the next time the Alouettes take on the Red Blacks, that if he's on that field, you know, things are going to happen. And it's so hard. I want to congratulate him for at least having the cojones to own it and embrace it. But at the same time, if it's just going to take away not just from the team, but also his performance as well in everybody's eyes, then what have you really gained at this point? Mm-hmm. And is this really the kind of strategy that people down south are looking at when it comes to looking for a top-notch wide receiver? This is what I want to ask. And again, I have to believe in my heart of hearts that this is all just part of the plan for Deron. And I really hope so, because like I said, I'm a huge fan of the guy. I think he's absolutely fantastic. And I think a lot of the nonsense that gets thrown in his direction is unwarranted. But when you come up with some of these comments, like he did, like I said, the pregame comments against Hamilton, and you know, making comments about Kent Austin and things like that. Like, I mean, it's just, you're throwing fuel on the fire. And maybe at this point, you just kind of want to, you know, sit the next couple plays out, if you will. Like, maybe just kind of lay low a bit. I don't know. I have to believe it's all part of the plan, like I said, but it's a little hard. It's a little hard at times to digest as a fan of the Alouettes.
Again, I just don't understand the point to, you know, to being such a month. I'm looking at the CBA as we're currently talking, and I'm trying to find out if there's anything in here. Obviously, they're going to go up against an independent arbitrator. That I understand, which makes completely good sense, because you don't want somebody who's involved in the league, you know, unlike the NFL.
What are you implying?
I don't know. that, you know, it will be a supposedly a fair, independent review. But a month, unless it had to do with because of the arbitrator wasn't available, that's all I could think about, that why this would be the way that it is. But, you know, my thought is this, and we had things come up recently too, is Major League Baseball most recently. You know, there have been many a thing, you know, when Jose Bautista got sucker punched, and he was, you know, for his slide, he was suspended a game. You know, the arbitrator decision was always immediate. I don't understand the amount of time, you know. And I'm reading this here. If this goes with the same situation, the arbitrator shall render a decision within 30 days following the conclusion of the hearing. 30 days. So technically, Deron could go another month without him or her making a decision.
Sure, sounds that way. So I mean, like I said, this whole bluster about will he or will he not play in Ottawa 2 days after the hearing. I mean, it's full of sound and fury for nothing. It could just be all talk, and who knows? Like, so to me, yeah, it's definitely unusual. I mean, I obviously there's not very many cases like this in CFL history where you see a player involved in a melee like this. Like, this is somewhat uncharted territory. I mean, people have been suspended. Some people have been fined in the past for various and sundry. And I mean, we're in a whole new era here, like it or not. So I mean, I almost have no words for this. It's, what do we do? What do we hope for in this case? I mean, obviously, as LOS fans, we do not want Daron Carter gone for any great length of time. I mean, one game already seems like too much when you have guys like Kenny Stafford and SJ Green on the 6-game injured list. We need all the help we can get offensively. So to not have a Daron Carter definitely is going to hurt. But at the same time, if justice has to be served, then let's not drag this out. Let's get a decision. Let's make something happen and then stick to it no matter what. You gotta stick by the courage of your conviction.
To me, it's just get it over with. Just get it over with. Whether we don't have any wide receivers or not. I mean, our stars. Just get it over with.
Yeah, and this nonsense about it being a couple of days before the game against Ottawa, where this whole thing started anyways, and then the fact that Montreal would be going into their house, and it's, again, not exactly the friendliest environment sometimes. So, yeah, I mean, it's great theater. I'll give you that. I mean, like I say, if you really want to – if the CFL was lacking in hype, well, I mean, that's just perfect right there. But as far as I'm concerned, it's just going to take away from the actual game itself. And then do we really want that sideshow attraction? Do we really want that goofiness that's going to ensue? I personally don't. I just want to see a good football game. And let the best team win. I mean, and if Daron Carter is going to play in that game, so be it. I want him to be there, though, because he is one of the better players in this league, if not one of the best wide receivers in this league.
Right.
I don't want his inclusion or exclusion to be any more of a story than what, unfortunately, it's already become. At this point, again, I want a resolution, and let the chips fall where they may, but something's got to give. That's the long and short of it.
Now, we're a week when we're taping this. We are a week from our next game versus TO. A lot could happen. To be fair, we did find out today that Kevin Glenn was back at practice, which is a plus. Bear Woods, though, even though Coach Pop says that he is okay and he's expected to play against Toronto, I mean, yes, it's another week. But Bear Woods being out there with a brace on, does that concern you?
It's always a concern, especially Bear Woods when he's healthy. There's just simply no one better than him in middle linebacker. When he's not healthy, though, you tend to notice the loss. Mind you, we've got a couple of good linebackers that can play up in the middle as well. You got guys like Nick Shortle and Nicolas Boulet who can step in and do a good job as well. From what I've been told, though, Bear's injury, he's kind of suffered a bit of a tweak in the last game against Hamilton. He actually took a knee in the nether regions.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that's not fun for anyone.
But yet, I don't see them putting a brace up there.
they don't, but I think it's all connected in some way. So, I mean, it just could just be the shock of – and that's why they always say lower body injury, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to believe that Bear's going to be okay no matter what. I think – like I said, you still got another week to go anyway. So, I mean, as long as he's not doing anything super strenuous with his knee to groin region, then I think we'll be okay with Bear. But if, God forbid, we're not, like I said, we've got two guys, both with the name Nick in their names, then they'll be able to step in and be more than helpful on this defense.
It's a tough stretch, though, for the team coming up, too. I mean, they're going to be, you know, they're one of two teams that is going to be playing. I think it's one of two teams this year that's going to be playing a game in 4 days, two games in 4 days. And the Owls are along that stretch now where they're going to be playing three games? I'm trying to look at the thing here.
Yeah, about three games in about 12 days.
Yeah, three games in about 12, 13. Well, luckily there's a week there, so it's a Friday to a Monday, so there's four to, and then they go, so it's a Monday, then they play at home on Friday, and then they play on the next Thursday. So you can do the math. It is about 14 days, 12 to 14 days. So we're at a tough stretch.
Absolutely, especially guys get hurt all the time, get banged up, and you can't just recover in like 2-3 days. These guys go through a car crash on every play practically, and you know they expect to just to dust themselves off a couple days later. Oh yeah, and also too the emotion that's going to be involved for Ben Cahoon night. And that's going to be taking place literally 4 days after playing the Argos in Toronto. I mean, thankfully, they're not crisscrossing the country like they did last year, playing in Saskatchewan on a Sunday and then coming back to play Ottawa on a playing in Ottawa on a Thursday.
Yeah.
I mean, at least it's nothing severe like that. But still, these things are still going to take their toll on the healthiest of players. And then, a week later, again, you're going to be playing? Like, I really don't understand the scheduling at that point. I think someone sort of dropped the ball there, and it's really unfair to this team.
Prior to 2000, we'll talk about this a little bit. But prior to 2000 and prior to last year, when we had it, the last time that we had a four games in between was 2007. It was funny; it was back to back years. Also, we did it 2007, 2006, 2007. Then before that, 2002, 2003, four games in between. But obviously, we want to try to preview this game because when we do our show next week, it'll be the day after the Alouettes Argos matchup. And hopefully we'll have a lot more positive things to say. Speaking of positives, before we get to that, I want to give a shout out to the Owls stats team. You guys, I think I want to give you props for improving the new stats board by a ton. By a ton. There's a lot more useful information on that board this week. I think you just need to tweak a few more things, in my opinion, for me who sits in section Y1 and trying to look at it without binoculars looking at the screen. And I don't know if you'll agree with me on this one, Cliff. I think the put less, but maybe put more abbreviations on some of the stuff. Don't worry about the player stats. Go with the team stats. Because I think the font got a little bit too small on the screen.
Yeah, a little bit. And like you said, team stats definitely, I would say, make that the forefront. Unless somebody's having like a monster game, then sort of focus on that particular player's highlights. I mean, you don't have to put every single player's little stats. And like you said, especially if it's coming at the expense of the font size, smaller and smaller. Like, it's great if you're, a little bit closer to the screen itself, and it's a big screen, but still, when you're sitting all the way back like we are in section Y, you're kind of straining your eyes a little bit here. Like, you want to follow along with the action. You want to pay attention to the game, but also too, like, these stats, especially for us, like, we devour stats. So, I mean, like, this is a godsend for us to be able to have the stats board constantly going in real time.
I love it. And them showing when any team scores, it shows what the scoring drive was. I love that. I would never have thought about that. That's a great thing to have up there too. Mm-hmm. See, you'll get a B as the Owls organization, bringing where it is. You get a B, but you can do better because I think you need some slight modifications. I mean, do we need to know what Kato's face looks like when you're showing his stats? No, we do not. You can just spell it out, but maybe change with a little bit of the font size on some of that stuff, on the smaller stuff. You do get to learn it repetitively once it goes over and over and over again. So you learn what the stats are. But when you have a new stat that pops up, even if you can't read it, then what's the point? But I'll give you props for that.
No, it's definitely been a great addition so far. And I don't know how many fans truly appreciate it like we do. And if you do, by all means, let us know about it, whether it's on Facebook, Twitter, or email. Mm-hmm. We'll let you know how to get in touch with us that way. But let us know, fans. Let us know what you think of the stats board. Because, I mean, I think it's a great compliment to the action. Because you really want to know how this team is performing. You really want to know the numbers don't lie. Simple as that. The numbers don't lie. So, I mean, if you're a fan of it, let us know. Hit us up on Facebook. Hit us up on Twitter. Let us know what you think of this stats board, because Tim and I, we're big stats guys. There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. Is it important to you or is it not so important? Let us know, because we're generally curious as to what you, the fans, going to Percival Molson Stadium, think of the stats board.
Right. And if you want, as Cliff is saying, if you want to contact us, you can do so at our email account at alouettespodcast@gmail.com. You can also go over to our Facebook page, which is Alouettes Flight Deck. And there is also Twitter at Alouettes FL Deck. And since we're talking about it anyways, do not forget that the podcast is available on three locations for all of your listening needs over at Podbean, iTunes, or Google Play Music. I said many things are going to change, so but we're still going to try to give as much of a preview for the game as we can before we finish up the show this week, Cliff. I know it's really early, and I like to give these things each week, and I might as well. So for on Five Dimes, if anybody who does the betting thing for Five Dimes, they have the Argos favorite at -7. I think it opened up at -6, so it's now -7. Massey ratings, which is a great tool, by the way, if you've never been to it, it covers more than just the CFL, covers all football, college, etc. It's weird. They have Toronto favorite at only 1.5 points, but take that for what it's worth. I don't know, but it's...
That would be the road field advantage, I guess, for Montreal.
Yeah, that's the other weird. And if anybody who's not been following this, and if you're a CFL fan, I'm sure you have. It's just absolutely crazy. It's, you know, road field advantage this year. You're saying, wait a minute, it's home field? Not this year. I know I got it wrong the first time that I posted it. What is it, 11-3-1?
Yeah, 11-3-1. The road teams are this season for the Canadian Football League. It's unbelievable. Like, they say there's no place like home. I'm like, well, several places like home. In fact, there are places that are better than home. And again, the fact that Montreal, they're 1-2, their sole victory came on the road, and their two losses at home. I mean, it's certainly not a coincidence, I don't think, especially because other teams in the league are sort of going through this as well. I mean, there's no advantage to be had by having your games in your home stadium this season, and it's such a weird aberration now. I wish there was a logical explanation for it, but there isn't. It's just so weird that your best bet really is, you know, you don't know who to take in your CFL pick'em or in daily fantasy sports. Focus on the road teams, because 9 times out of 10, it seems like, or yeah, I'd say 9 times out of 10, or even better than that, they're going to win.
What does this team have to do? It looks like we're going to have Glenn under center, at least at the moment. But what does this team have to do to beat Ricky Ray and we know their running game is absolutely amazing. I mean, we should know he was a former Alouette. What else? I mean, what else do we need to do? What else can the Owls do? I mean, obviously it's score, but to win this game, what are they besides just being on the road? What else do we need to do?
Well, Kevin Glenn's got to play like Kevin Glenn knows how to play. Maybe that's really what it came down to, was not having that veteran presence last game may have really, really, truly hurt the Alouettes. And I think having Kevin Glenn playing this coming Monday is going to make a remarkable difference. The big thing that is, though, I mean, you saw it against Ottawa. It really felt like he was just running the same 5 plays over and over again. He's got to be better. Eye infection. I don't care what the excuse. There's no excuses anymore. We expect more out of a Kevin Glenn, and I have a feeling he's going to step up and be able to perform. I think he's got some talented receivers still.
Yes, they do. Yeah. B.J. Cunningham. What a game. What a game.
Oh, he's not going to replace S.J. Green, not by a long shot. But you know what? You give him a chance. Give him a chance to get open. He'll make some plays happen. I guarantee it. I think Kevin Glenn, if he can establish a good rhythm with him, Alex Charette, who's back in the lineup now, another great young national receiver that, again, good route running. I think if you can just find a way to open both him and Cunningham up, worst case scenario, get that double coverage on those guys, you open things up for guys like Sam Jaguar and Nick Lewis. And again, if you've got to just dump off to them, like I said, get those 8 yards. If that's all you can do for that point, get the 8 yards, and then you put Rutley to work to get the rest, and you just chip away at it one play at a time. It doesn't have to be pretty football, because ugly wins count just as much as the pretty wins.
Right.
That's all there is to it. So, I mean, if you can just find a way just to get the offense humming, get some sort of actual rhythm going, the defense is going to take care of itself. And special teams, well, I want to believe that this past Friday was just, like I said, everybody gets one bad game. You have that one bad day at the office. I really want to believe that's what it was for special teams. I know Kavis Reed can be better as a coach, and I think he's going to make that very clear to his charges this week in practice. And I think we're going to see a remarked difference this coming Monday.
Trying to look at this stuff here. I mean, see where these different teams are ranked and stuff like that. I mean, total points, Toronto's seventh and Montreal ninth respectively. God, we've only scored 42 points. That's absolutely atrocious. net offense, Montreal is seventh. Toronto is ninth. But yet the Owls are averaging 336 yards a game. Man, Ottawa, 503. Jeez, man. It's something will have to be done completely for this team to win. I mean, it would be nice if the road field advantage works to our advantage. I mean, sure, Toronto does not really have that many named wide receivers, you know, big names that we know of.
Well, the biggest name that they're going to have, the Montreal secondary is going to have to take care of, is Vidal Hazelton.
Yes.
Hazelton. He's a tremendous player. And again, if he gets open, watch out, because Ricky Ray knows how to just drop that pass right into his hands. And again, we've still got those rookie cornerbacks that are going to get tested over and over again. And Ricky Ray, he knows how to do that. He knows how to just make plays like that happen. So, I mean, if I'm Norrell Thorpe and I'm coaching these guys up, I want to make it very clear. You got to stay on guys like Hazelton and don't do anything illegal. You don't have to. Just stay on them. Don't get beat mm-hmm. by someone like this. And again, if you give them half a chance, they certainly will beat you. So definitely do not take the Argos lightly. I mean, they're, again, you can't bet against Ricky Ray. There's no question about that. Right. I did say at the start of the season that when it's all said and done, I think the Argos are going to be the class of the East. And again, it's still wide open. I wasn't expecting Ottawa to really come alive like they did. So, I mean, that opinion is starting to change a little bit. But, I mean, as long as you've got Ricky Ray and he's healthy, you've got Brandon Whitaker, who has seemed to have developed a bit of a resurgence playing in Toronto. I mean, the offense is definitely there for Toronto. And their defense, too, coached by Rich Stubler, they've got a lot of powerful weapons there as well. And it's going to be a good matchup, I think. I think that on paper, at least, these are two very balanced teams. And I think it could definitely be another tight-knit battle, another tight defensive battle. It certainly won't be 5-4. At least I hope not, because 5-4.
I don't need another one of those.
Yeah, no. I mean,
I think the other thing, too, is that the Alouettes need to cut down on their penalties. It's an obvious fact. They got to cut down on these things. They are they're eighth in the league, and they're averaging 13.3 a game. 40 of them are total. 15 offensively, 12 defensively, 6 special teams, and I don't know what STR stands for. I don't know what they stand for. Steve Daniel, yeah. Tell me what they mean.
I was going to say, don't we have a guy on staff for this?
Yes, we do. That's why I'm calling out Steve.
Steve, you're slacking, bro. Come on.
No, that's what I can tell. I know you're joking. That's one thing that man does not do. I don't know. But it's... As I said, the Owls need this game, I think, to get back into the groove of thing, get Nick a little bit happier. That's all I can say. That's really all I can say, but it should be very interesting. Anything else you want to bring up quickly before we're done?
Also, we should mention, too, that this is going to be Montreal's only visit to BMO Field this year. So I don't know how many Alouettes fans are going to make the trek.
Not necessarily. Could be their one of two. Come on, you got to be positive.
That is true. That is absolutely true. I'm just saying it's their first official visit to BMO Field.
It's their only regular season visit.
Yeah, okay, I'll accept that.
Yes.
But it's going to be really interesting because from what I've seen, I mean, I know the Argos themselves and the league for the most part have put a lot into the BMO Field experience. And I'm really curious to see how it's going to turn out for Montreal as well as the visiting team.
Yeah, I'm curious to know how the crowd's going to be, because they drew a dismal 12K last week in Toronto, and I understand there were some circumstances, insinuated circumstances, but yeesh.
Yeah, because I mean it's one thing to draw 12K in Skydome,
yeah,
hyping it up like you wouldn't believe, mm-hmm. and then you pull in that number. And yes, you're absolutely right. There were some extenuating circumstances that sort of led to such a dismal number. And I really hope that that's just the exception and not the rule, because right. quite frankly, Toronto as a whole deserves a lot better than that. It's hard for me to say as a Montreal guy that Toronto deserves better at anything. But at the end of the day, a stronger Toronto Argonauts team means a stronger league, and that's just good for everybody.
Right. And just as a quick mention, something that I'll mention, it just came across as you and I were talking, Cliff. Grey Cup tickets have finally been announced for Toronto. Finally, they've been announced. So if anybody's interested, I know they go on sale to the public as of Monday, August 15th at 10 a.m. Eastern time. Prices range, Cliff, from $899 for field side seats to as low as $169.
Well, there's definitely all sorts of options. $899, eh?
Literally, they're sideline seats. Field side. They're on the field.
Well, it's a championship game, right? I mean, you got to expect things are going to cost a little bit more for a championship game as opposed to a regular season game. And also, too, you're getting the experience of the Grey Cup itself. Also, too, a live open-air stadium, you can't beat that. There's no question that it's going to be a great atmosphere no matter what. And I'm really excited for the city of Toronto as well because, yeah, the Sky Dome, yeah, you can pack in 50,000 fans and it's going to be a rocking atmosphere for the Grey Cup itself. But a smaller, more intimate venue, I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. It's going to bring back a lot of memories for fans that, again, this is probably before our time even, but back at Exhibition Stadium back in the day, was always a party. That's where they've held the most Grey Cups, actually, was at Exhibition Stadium. And I think this is going to really spark a whole new thought for the next generation, if you will, of Canadian Football League fans, is right. Having a Grey Cup at BMO Field, open air, Toronto, the biggest city of Canada. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the experience. I mean, the Grey Cup is always a fantastic event, no matter where it's being held. But there's just something about Toronto and a Grey Cup that it's just going to unite a whole lot of fans, and I'm looking forward to the experience. I'm really hoping that if Montreal is in the Grey Cup, that's going to be fantastic. It's just going to add to an already awesome weekend. I'm stoked for it. I can't wait.
It should be fun. One trip I won't be making this year. I will be going to I think to the one in Ottawa next year for the all the Canada 150 celebrations. It should be fun no matter. I know quite a few of my friends go to the Grey Cup, and it should be quite enjoyable. So I'll just be relegated to watching it on TV, but that's no big deal. I don't mind that. It's okay.
Well, if the tickets were all $899, I think just about everybody else would be watching on TV too, because my word, that's a lot of money for one football game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's not NFL. It's not the NBA, but I guess you're on the field and okay. I'd never pay it, but
it's a little rich for my blood.
I got my limit. So,
I mean, I love this league. Yeah. I definitely love. I wanted to see it grow. I want to see it be great. But I mean, that $899. Yeah, that's for one game is just a wee out of my price range.
Exactly. But you know what?
Like you said, tickets do start at $169. I mean, that is relatively affordable. For a championship game.
Exactly. Exactly. So. We were happy to end this podcast on a positive note. For those of you, we'll talk about more about what's coming up. But don't forget, if you don't have your tickets, by the way, for the next home game, it is the Ben Cahoon jersey retirement ceremony at halftime. So if you don't have your tickets, go ahead and get them and see some history. See some history. That's all I can say. So, Cliff, enjoy the week. I will talk to you after the Argos game next week. And for everybody here at Alouette's Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.